Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and my topic today shouldn't surprise any of my normal supporters. Speaking of support, you may donate to me and keep this show on the air at my website, rushjournal.org, which could be reached from the Radio Aryan platform. I've been hit by a big IRS bill. I'm still not able to figure this out, whether this is harassment or what it is. But what I'm going to talk about today is certainly not going to help my case, because my topic is the U.S. Army and the end of the world. For centuries, Protestants have almost defined themselves as one sect after another coming into existence, often on the basis of an end of the world claim. The great error Protestants have is that they have no connection to the Church Fathers. They have no connection to those who the apostles taught and those who they taught and so on, that made up the Church of the ancient world. These are the men who decided what goes into the Bible and what doesn't, what the Bible actually is, the standards, and the interpretations, because you can't decide what goes in the Bible without a proper interpretation of it. So to venerate the Bible and knowing nothing about the Church Fathers is something like, you know, venerating the Constitution and having no idea who James Madison is and what he thought. The Bible is not self-interpreting. In fact, most of it is completely impenetrable to most people, especially today, where language is always in flux. And that's their great error. The point I'm trying to make is that because they don't have that connection, Protestants take numbers literally rather than the icons that they actually are. They take them as numerals. They try to do these mathematical equations to show us precisely when the world is going to come to an end. Every other day, it's a new doctrine. It's a new concept. And so many conservative Protestants simply worship the state of Israel, and make up the backbone of the Republican Party. And one of the aspects of that unfortunate movement is their worship of the U.S. military. Most of you know that I don't share that veneration. A lot of this comes from my father. A lot of this comes from recent events. And in my own lifetime, I've seen the military go from a hated institution to a worshipped institution. As I've said before, there's only one thing that changed, and that's the nature of the enemy. When the U.S. was in Vietnam, it was proof that the government and the ruling class were not the same. The ruling class created the anti-war movement. Now the ruling class and the government are identical, and have been for some time. And so there are no anti-war movements anywhere, even though this is longer and even, you know, has far less purpose than Vietnam. At least there was a purpose in the Vietnam War. There was an enemy in the Vietnam War. Here, you have a situation where, you know, Saddam Hussein, who never threatened the U.S., had been a trading partner of the U.S. up until that point. The Taliban in Afghanistan certainly never an enemy of the U.S., actually an ally of the U.S. for some time, an ally of Pakistan. And they were an ally of the U.S. because of their role in checking Iran. So there's no purpose here. No one even knows why these areas were chosen outside of the obvious economic issues. But of course, Iraq especially was Israel's main enemy. Iraq was under the very wise leadership of Saddam Hussein, was a unified state, economically very powerful, militarily very powerful, on the verge of first world status, which is something that Israel couldn't handle. So all of a sudden, the U.S. military went from the baby killers of the early 70s to supermen today. The standards have fallen laughably. When the war first started, I remember seeing, and my father used to laugh at these, because back in World War II, if you lost a son in the war, you put a flag outside your house that had one single star on it. If you lost two sons, it had two. And you always knew who lost a child or who lost a family member. Now, those exact same flags are being flown because they have a family member in the military, whether or not they're even in the combat zone. You're getting bronze stars, 20, 30,000, just over the last few years, for completely non-combat roles, almost all of them going to officers. So the war has been lost, the U.S. humiliated, and yet never at any other time have they gotten more medals. Never at any other time has the officer pay been higher. Officer pay is six figures. You know, mid-level officers are making $100,000 a year with 1,000 different allowances and no taxes and the best, you know, it could go on. This isn't the case anywhere else in the world and hasn't been the case in the U.S. military up until fairly recently. But I want to connect the U.S. Army to, or U.S. military in general, to the end of the world. St. Seraphim Relitsky, who died in 1949, said that the West, in every possible way, will contribute to the destruction of Russia and will give up its eastern part to China. The Far East will be taken into the hands of the Japanese, Siberia, the Chinese, who migrate to Russia, marry the Russians, and end cunning, taking all the territory of Siberia to the Urals. China wants to go further, the West will oppose, not allow it. Many countries will take up arms against Russia, but it will stand. Having lost much of its land, this war, about which the Holy Scripture narrates, will become the cause of the unification of mankind. Jerusalem will become the capital of Israel, and eventually it will become the capital of the world. People will suffer and will choose a single government. This will be the threshold of the accession of Antichrist. The persecution of Christians will begin from the echelons of the cities deep into Russia. Then comes a kingdom of lies and evil so hard, so bad, God forbid we live to this time. But then there'll be a time where there's no persecution. The money and the delights of the world will turn people away from God. And many more souls will die far more than during open hostility. On the one hand, they'll erect crosses and gild the domes, and on the other, there'll be a kingdom of lies and evil. The true church will always be persecuted. It will be possible to be saved only by sorrow, illness, and suffering. And persecution will be taken by the most sophisticated, unpredictable nature. It will be terrible to live up to those times. He died in 1949. While he has some historical issues, you know, that are questionable, the general thrust of what he says is absolutely correct. In the 4th century Egyptian desert, we hear this from Abba Asherian. The fathers asked him, "What do we do? What do we accomplish out here?" And he said, "We've kept the commandments of God." And they asked, "Well, what about those of us who come after? They'll do half as well as we have. And what about after them? What about those at the end?" He replied, "They will not have monasticism at all. They'll be under assault. And those who will stand will be higher than us and any of our fathers." In other words, the pain that people living in our times will suffer will be so bad that we'll be greater than they are. What St. Seraphim is saying before him is that it's prosperity. It's the capitalist realm of choice, superficiality, nominalism that's going to destroy souls. Open persecution from the state is one thing, but when they're able to get inside your head, it's another. The monk George of Zadonsk in 1863, he said, "Many will believe Antichrist is God. Those who are pure in faith, though, they'll know differently. those who have God's divine knowledge and intelligence, the coming of the tormentor will be normal, will be ordinary. Those who have rejected the world will recognize the evil. Those tied to the world will believe it. In other words, when you're tied to the power structure in one way or another, you can't see spiritual entities. You can't decide between good and evil. You simply don't know because your self-interest has tied you to the world. And the point is that, you know, even churches you can't trust, they say this over and over again, relative to, the theology is gone, monasticism is gone, the family is gone. St. John Chrysostom says, when he was asked, when that the end times have come, he says, when women lose their shame. Now, what does he mean by that? When I read it many years ago, it made perfect sense to me. Women are shy, and you have arranged marriages. You know, prior to the 20th century, even the second half of the 20th century, young men and women being alone was almost impossible. It never happened. It was very rare, and people would look at it as very suspicious. People say that, you know, men and women had sex just like they have now, you know, young people. And, of course, it's a lie. How could they? It was extremely rare that boys and girls were alone together. You didn't have abortion or birth control. Everything wasn't completely sexualized. Manhood wasn't defined by how many women you can get. The culture has been so perverted in that way that people want to justify themselves by saying, well, everyone was like that. And it's simply not true. What these people say, let's say the Romanian elder, Dionysius of Athos, who died in 2004. He says this is the end. We have entered the final century. Know that the most terrible disasters will start beginning. We're waiting for the advent of Antichrist. But the apostles of Antichrist know how to act, to bring the truth to its knees, to put orthodoxy on its knees. As long as orthodoxy remains, they know that the kingdom of Antichrist can't reign. There'll be a terrible war, maybe not now, maybe for several years. You'll have hope for God, but the times now are now critical, very critical. As the Holy Fathers and the prophets say, we've entered the final times. Many ills will befall humanity, and radical changes will take place. Mankind now is waiting for two terrible dangers, the Great War and the Kingdom of the Antichrist. Now, God knows what'll start sooner, the expected war of the realm of Antichrist himself. We have nothing left. We will prepare for repentance toward a pure confession. No one can be saved except by repentance. One of the indirect signs that we've entered the end is that evil has spread worldwide. Virtue has become completely impoverished. But while orthodoxy preserves true doctrine, neither the kingdom of Antichrist nor will the regime be able to bring us to its knees, our knees. What is now the last time can be seen from the war being waged on orthodoxy. The first open, unhealed wound that was inflicted on him, with the transition, on it, I should say, with the transition to the new style, the new calendar. And the second was the recognition of a religion as essential to the person. Now, what he says here is that the abolition of the religion label on passports, but he means something more specific than that, more general than that, I should say. Elder Philotheus Tsavakos, who died in 1980, who was a student of the Kolevadis fathers, he says, all will bow. Authorities, bishops, ministers, officers, priests, monks, soldiers, the educated, the illiterate, the rich, the poor, men, women, from this generation, from these people, one will not expect any progress or awakening. The sons of perdition, the sons of disobedience. There'll be a handful of exceptions, a few chosen, for the sake of which God tolerates most of the apostates. But these elect are so few, I'm afraid they won't be able to stop the righteous wrath of God directed against apostates. The great wrath of the Lord Almighty will come, and sorrow that has not yet come from the beginning of the universe until today. Where can we hide? Only with God can we hide. We need to be prepared for this because the end of the world has come very, very close. An old book I found many years ago, I read many other things. The disciples asked our Lord Jesus, and the awesome signs of the second coming, and the love of many will grow cold, and faith will disappear. The Lord said, men will become men, women will become men, and men will become women. John Chrysostom says women will lose their shame, and this is when the last judgment will be near. And these prophecies for Lord Jesus Christ, St. John Chrysostom, and other prophets, apostles, and holy fathers are precisely fulfilled today. The impressive array of saints that we have talking about what the end will be like, they all have very similar commonalities. Number one, the official church will cease to function, except only in externals. Number two, ignorance about the fathers and the church in general will reign everywhere. Thirdly, there will be a handful of true Christians left that really won't have any real kind of social power or authority of any kind. Number four, that prosperity will destroy as much as open persecution. And finally, that Antichrist will come after a war, where, as you read in Hobbes' Leviathan, where people simply can't stand the uncertainty of violence, will pretty much do anything for peace. Now, my personal opinion is that Antichrist is not a single individual. I think that will be very, very blatantly obvious to anyone that this is not right. You have the regime screaming against dictators every day. I don't think that that's... I think it will be an institution, and I think it will be a group of people acting as an individual. That is, the Jews bringing about the primal man, Adam Kadmon. That Adam Kadmon is Antichrist. So in that sense, he's an individual. But Adam Kadmon is the new man. He's a primal man. He is what they see as the very first manifestation of the Ein Sof in the Kabbalah. That's what Antichrist is. Many of these fathers say that Jerusalem will become the capital, not just of Israel, but of the world. And it's one reason we have to read the contemporary fathers as much as the ancient ones, because the ancient ones didn't really even have a vocabulary to describe what we're dealing with now. Archbishop Theophan Bistroff, who died in 1940 in a Russian Orthodox church abroad, died in France as a hermit. He does talk about the resurrection of Russia. He talks about a leader that will come with an iron will, where Orthodoxy will begin to flourish in one form or another. But then he'll die or fall or be attacked, and the war will begin. There'll become a point where the churches seem to be making progress. There seems to be great conversions, and yet they're nothing more than temples of Satan, because ultimately they serve the world. Archbishop Theophanes, Theophan says that there will be very little in terms of sacramental life, and that many people won't know this and won't be able to understand this. But there will be a handful, who will get whatever they need, sacramentally or not, who will be saved. They are directly chosen by God and the Mother of God. But repentance is the essential thing. So these men, overwhelmingly in the 20th century, and even some one in the 21st century, are all saying the same thing. Russia is the absolute center of everything, and her condition is thus the condition of the world. Now, what does this have to do with the U.S. military? Well, you had at least one of these saints, Saint Seraphim, who talks about the West will be at war with Russia to such an extent that in fact will be the defining war of the end times. As of today, Russia is the only thing that stands in the way of the total victory of the New World Order, which is why it's hated to such an extent. It's nationalized its oil industry, it's nationalized its central bank, it's in union with Russia and Iran, bringing about a new currency that the U.S. will have nothing to do with. They'll crash the dollar. I mean, this is what's happening today. And you know it's important because no one's talking about it. The U.S. military is being worshipped and venerated, and these officers given ridiculous salaries because they're going to be fighting a war that they can't win. They're going to be fighting a war that doesn't seem to have a blatant purpose, because the fact that Russia is now surrounded with Western armies, offensively poised, for no obvious reason. You know, the aggression of Russia, it does not exist, whether it be in the Baltics or Ukraine, simply doesn't exist. The aggression of the West is blatant. Russia hasn't attempted to surround the Western United States through Alaska. It's the U.S. that's doing that to Russia. But the U.S. Army, the U.S. military is one of the arms of Antichrist. I want to talk briefly about the Presidio. Now, this is an old story that some of you may know, some of you may not know. But it's been swept under the rug, and it proves without a doubt that the U.S. military is an arm of just that force. It was 30 years ago, almost today, that Gary Hambright, the U.S. Army, was accused by many young children of being a very, very sick molester. He worked at the Child Development Center at the Presidio. The evidence against this man was overwhelming, not just from the testimony of the children, but for Senate evidence, too. There were 900 witnesses against him, and yet the heroic U.S. Army didn't find a single one credible. An article came out in 1988 called Child Abuse at the Presidio, The Parents' Agony, The Army's Cover-Up, and the Prosecution's Failure, from the San Jose Mercury News. And the fact is, the U.S. Army and the U.S. military have been covering this up for many years. But once this occurred, this is in San Francisco, by the way, when you had all of these witnesses, the Army did not shut the center down, which is normally the case elsewhere. Now, I'm a father, and I won't, and I can't read some of the things that he was accused of, because it's too much. My stomach gets weaker as I get older. You need to take my word for it here. Poo-poo baseball is just one of the most tame. Death threats were common. Dr. Kevin Coulter, after examining the children, was completely convinced they had been harmed. Anal trauma of three-year-olds. He proved it without doubt. I'm going to say no more about that. And he got a yawn from the U.S. Army. He got a yawn from the prosecution. But it gets worse than that. The Army took a month to tell the other parents that the accusation had been made. Then once the investigation begins, more accusations. It became a flood. Children don't make detailed accusations of such trauma out of thin air. But it gets worse than that. When the Army did finally notify the other families, they said, and this is an exact quote here, "The commander of the Presidio of San Francisco has been apprised of a single incident of alleged child sexual abuse reported to have occurred at the Presidio Child Development Center. We have no reason to believe that other children have been victimized," which of course was a blatant lie. Among the victims, there were five confirmed cases of chlamydia. The parents were told that Hambright, who, by the way, thank God, died of AIDS shortly thereafter, that he had AIDS, and therefore the children might too. The Army deliberately took months to bring the tests back, which is almost a way just to torture the family. Can you imagine waiting for 5 months to find out whether your children have AIDS from this guy? They could have done it overnight. But it gets worse than that. In March of that year, 3 months after Hambright's arrest, the charges were dismissed. U.S. District Judge William Schwarzer, he refused to allow the admission of what were called hearsay statements, Well, hearsay is a problem, but what does it mean here? It means that the judge refused to hear about statements that children made to their mothers and fathers, brothers, whatever. That's not legal hearsay, and it certainly isn't under these circumstances. There's a big difference between being a witness to a statement on the one hand and hearsay on the other. And then, if it can get any worse, their testimony, which was detailed, they were sent to other homes and everything else, they detailed all of this, and you know, they were rejected as witnesses because of their age. So you have the abuse, the army's cover-up and torture of the parents, and you have the judge's cooperation on top of it. The only piece of good news that came out of it is that the DA had the dismissal done without prejudice. In other words, that it could be reopened if there's more evidence, and then there were mountains of evidence. Lieutenant Colonel Walter Meyer, with the very definition of an office drone, director of personnel and community activities, he attacked the families. He hated the fact that they were keeping the case alive. One time, he refused to meet with one of the mothers, a woman named Joyce Tobin, because he was headed to Atlanta, to the CDC, because he was giving a speech extolling the Presidio as one of the greatest child care centers on the planet. By the spring of 87, 40 children had independently stated very strange sexual things that happened there. But this is nothing new for the U.S. military. The Army wouldn't cooperate in giving information over previous cases. The same sort of thing happened at West Point and Fort Dix. 1982. And by the way, the Presidio had previous accusations of sexual abuse 4 years earlier. Military policeman by the name of Ed Albansky, who was the chief of juvenile investigations at the Presidio, was ordered by his superiors to stop the investigation. And again, back in 82, the center stayed open. All charges were dismissed. It continued. This had been going on throughout the 1980s. Over and over again, Albansky went to his superiors talking about hearing these things. He was told to stop any investigation, and he was threatened for it. There is nothing to look into, they said. There was a former Army captain, Gary Boswell, who approached one of the bureaucrats in April of 1985. Picking up his daughter at the center, he said she had a red spot in her hand, which she'd been burned. The teacher burned me, she said. The girl was taking the kids and taking a magnifying glass and holding their hands until they jerked their hands away and cried. In other words, burning them with sunlight. Boswell is a civilian employee at the Presidio at the time. I went to see the head of it, and he wasn't very pleased. He looked into it, he said. He came back, he said, we talked to the person. There were no eyewitnesses. It's your daughter's word against hers, so we can't do anything. We took our daughter away. Captain Tom Dorsey, the medical doctor, replied that she dropped her daughter off there. She saw a woman on her hands and knees, bent over, putting her hands in a little girl's pants. The woman took her hands out from the little girl's pants and put them on her top and tickled her on both breasts and then went back down to the pants, etc. Now, I have a problem with this only because why didn't she go running inside to stop it? Would she just look at it and walk away? Sometime later, she discussed the incident with someone, and that's a little iffy. You go running in and stop it if you see that. But she was yelled at, and she was told they were just playing innocent tickling games. 1984, three-year-old girl was raped by a teacher at the child care center at West Point. Several children reported animal sacrifice, cult-like behavior among the abusers. And the activities extended beyond the military academy to Orange County at military base in San Francisco, parents charged. An investigation by, of all people, Rudolph Giuliani, ended with no charges filed. The three-year-old had been rushed to the hospital with lacerations on her private area. Oh, and by the way, the West Point Daycare Center building number was 666. They changed that very quickly to 673 once the accusation was first made. The New York Times refused to report the hospital visit, saying only that complaints were made against the center. 10 years later, that same girl couldn't go to the bathroom without her mother standing by the door. Now, this is weird. Well, not even getting an indictment in criminal court. The family's received millions of dollars in compensation in civil court. Is that a payoff? How can you win in civil court and fail in criminal court? Giuliani himself said the investigation found significant indications that children may have been abused, and yet no indictments. Nothing adds up here. Nothing makes sense here. The Army's refusal to cooperate in the investigation enraged, so angered former Army doctor Walter Grote that he refused a promotion to major in 1985 because of the treatment of his child sexual abuse at West Point. He was one of the first parents to file the lawsuit. The Army ran an investigation of 300 of its child care centers and found accusations of sexual assault at more than 10% of them between 1984 and 1987. August 1983, just a month before the first sex abuse case broke, a 22-month-old child had been murdered by the mother's boyfriend, an Army staff sergeant. After the court-martial hearing, the sergeant was given an 18-month suspended sentence and a dishonorable discharge. Colonel Richard Eckert, doctor then in charge of the West Point Child Protection Case Management Team, was outraged. He wrote in 1983 to General Willard Scott, the superintendent of West Point. He said, "The community has received a devastating message. West Point and the Army take child abuse lightly and do not consider it a major offense. The guy that murdered a 22-month-old baby was let off. They kicked him out of the Army to prevent any publicity." Dr. Pat Jones, another pediatrician at West Point, believes his 15-month-old daughter was sexually abused at the center, too. He resigned from the Army in protest. No indictments were ever made, let alone conviction. August 14, 1987, San Francisco police raided the home of the infamous Michael Aquino, high-ranking Army specialist in psychological warfare and the founder of the Temple of Set. Most of you know this. His mansion certainly couldn't have been paid on an officer's salary. Very high, but not like this. The raid came after more allegations of child rape, this time of a 4-year-old, and the main suspect was Gary Hambright. This man was charged with 58 separate incidents of child abuse. The Presidio was only one. The San Francisco Examiner, October 30, 1987, one of the victims identified Aquino and his wife as partaking in this crime. They were taking pictures. How do we know this? Because a child described his mansion in detail. In the raid, they confiscated hours and hours of videotape that was never heard from again. Yet again in 1988, the full indictment against Hambright was dropped by the U.S. Attorney General, Russinello. And his argument is very weak. His argument was, yes, child abuse did occur, but we can't link Hambright with the crime. So then nothing was done? Well, Russinello was involved in covering up links between the Contras and the cocaine traffickers later on. The decision not to prosecute Hambright or Aquino had national security implications, he said. Michael Aquino reached a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army with a psychological warfare specialist and a Satanist. And he wrote an article. It was never published, but it became very famous regardless in 1980. And this is what he said in an article. He said this. He's talking about mind war. He's talking about the use of propaganda to change cultures and to change people in a very aggressive way. He says this. In this strategic context, mind war must reach out to friends, enemies, and neutrals alike across the globe. Through the media possessed by the United States, which has the capabilities to reach virtually everyone on the face of the earth. These media are, of course, electronic media, television, radio, state-of-the-art developments in satellite communications, video recording, laser optical transmissions, broadcasts make possible a penetration of the minds of the world as it would have been inconceivable just a few years ago, he said. He writes this in 1980. And then he says the U.S. itself needs to be targeted. And he says, by denying enemy propaganda access to our people, by explaining and emphasizing to our people the rationale for our national interest. Rather, it states a whole truth that if it doesn't exist, it will be forced into existence by the will of the United States. Denying enemy propaganda. Well, as you guys realize, this laughable Russian manipulation scheme has nothing to do with any kind of computer hacking. It only had to do with Russia Today, I guess people like me, engaging in propaganda such that Hillary Clinton lost the election. It is not a stretch to say that the color revolution throughout the globe are traceable to this article, which became very famous amongst war planners. The Temple of Set and this kind of movement, the left-hand dark Gnostic path, this is the core of these cultural revolutions, these color revolutions. The reason it wasn't published in 1980 was because they didn't want to propagandize it. They didn't want this out in the public. But as Aquino is being investigated for these crimes, as evidence piles up, he never lost his security clearance to the Pentagon. Army spokesman Major Greg Rixon said this. A reporter had contacted him about this, and he said, well, the question is whether he is trustworthy or can do the job. There's nothing that would indicate in this case that there's any problem we should be concerned about. So as Aquino was under investigation here, that was the Pentagon's response. In other words, there's no problem. In the 1970s, the Department of the Army published its handbook for chaplains. And here's how it describes Satanism as one of the, you know, chaplaincies that the military has. It sounds like they're acting as missionaries. The Army author says this. Often confused with witchcraft, Satanism is the worship of Satan, also known as Baphomet or Lucifer. Classical Satanism, often involving black masses, human sacrifices, or other sacrilegious or illegal acts, is now very rare. Modern Satanism is based on both the knowledge of ritual magic, with a K, and the anti-establishment mood of the 1960s. It is related to classical Satanism more in image than substance, and generally focused on rational self-interest with some ritualistic trappings. It reads like a paid advertisement. You see, they spell the word magic with a K, its Old English variant, as a means to separate it from what stage magicians do, pulling rabbits out of hats and everything else. He says that the illegal acts, etc., are very rare. Well, he doesn't cite a source for this. How could he possibly have known this? And the rational core of this is rational self-interest? Well, who's against that? There's no group that preaches self-negation. Even Christianity, I mean, you know, Christ preached self-sacrifice, then it's certainly in one's interest to get on board. I guess a suicide cult would be the only thing that would be against rational self-interest. Well, the point of this all is to depict this kind of demonism as harmless and rational. And yet, more recently, Colonel Daniel Murray was removed from the command of the 62nd Medical Squadron at McChord in Washington for mentioning Christ once in a conversation in 2017. He violated no directive, order, or regulation whatsoever. That very same year, Colonel Bohannon was removed from deputy command at Barksdale in Louisiana for opposing gay marriage in a single conversation. Now, Bohannon's been rehabilitated, but it's only a temporary setback. 2017, the Air Force Academy's National Character and Leadership Symposium was about acceptance of transgenderism. And of all places, West Point has had several gay weddings just recently in this year, 2018. U.S. Army Chaplain Scott Squires has been reprimanded for his opposition to these unnatural unions. The Royal Navy, too, has satanic chaplains. So as these guys are being removed, and it's a lot deeper than this, a lot more have been removed. And I want to note something as an aside. Since 2014, I want to say 2011, there's been about 500 officers fired without cause. And these are high-ranking guys. There's a few articles floating around on this. Clearly, there's a purge going on. These guys didn't retire. They didn't do anything, you know, they didn't get court-martialed or anything else. They were simply fired. I'm willing to bet that these guys are conservative in politics. And it goes back to the, you know, after years and years of denying its existence, the Washington Post finally admitted the Bohemian Grove is a conclave of powerful elites in America, and they worship the god of human sacrifice, Moloch. God is banned from all official public functions. And Hillary Clinton writes in an email, August 20th, 2015. I don't know the context off the top of my head, but she says, and I quote, "With fingers crossed, the old rabbit's foot out of the box in the attic, I'll be sacrificing a chicken in the backyard to Moloch." That's State Department document number C0576491. There is no way this is anything but a deadly serious statement. That she would even know of Moloch's existence, and that you could sacrifice to it, suggests that there's something serious going on here. And of course, I don't think she really means a chicken. The United States is officially an atheist state, or demonic state, where Christian symbols are removed, and demonic symbols and Jewish symbols, which are one and the same to me, are raised in their place. The so-called separation of church and state, which was a phrase that Lenin created to destroy the church, of course doesn't apply to Jews. I mean, between just 2012 and 2013, 18 commanding generals, just generals alone, were fired without cause. Almost 100 Navy officers, mid to high rank, were fired without cause from 2011 to 2013. No one's entirely certain. These men were simply removed from office. There was no court-martial, nothing like that. They were simply fired. Since at least 2011, 2012, there's been a monstrous purge of all armed forces of the United States. Now, it doesn't take a genius to figure out why. There are a few things. The U.S. is going to be fighting a war with an opponent that it can't defeat, with huge casualties, for no obvious reason. They need to get rid of people who will stand in the way of that. They will be imposing leftist liberal ends on any place that they happen to conquer. So conservatives and Christians simply can't be there. I said before on this show and elsewhere that every military base must have a multicultural parade and programs. They all have gay rights days, entire days set aside for this. Go to the website of any base and search for it, and you'll find it. The Air Force is one I know best, but no doubt it exists everywhere. Officially now, the U.S. military is a leftist, radical institution. Yet you still have men who, you know, these Republicans who still think the Cold War is going on, and that the U.S. is fighting liberalism. That somehow the U.S. military is inherently a conservative institution. It is not. It may have been many years ago when the primary enemy was Marxism. And militaries accept the ideology of whoever they're serving. And they were communists for communists. They're national socialists for them. This is what armies are. So anybody who doesn't go along, this is classic Soviet behavior. The very last lecture I did here on Grigorenko, was getting rid of a guy who they couldn't trust anymore. But he was too famous and too beloved, he was very popular with his men, to just shoot. So they had to invent a mental illness. This, and I didn't have as much time as I wanted to explain this, but this is going to be, and already is, a means of control. I mentioned something like the term was sluggish schizophrenia, which came from a Soviet psychologist, and at the time, psychiatrist, I should say, and at the time was condemned because it simply meant that anyone who showed any kind of deviance from the Soviet point of view, any kind of disobedience, may be developing into a full-blown mental illness, and therefore we have to act now. But if I look at the DSM-5, I'm looking at defiant personality disorder. I'm looking at a social science textbook, not a scientific one, not a medical one, that penalizes behaviors and then medicalizes them. This is not a medical book, and yet psychiatrists have MDs. Someone who defies authority is seen as mentally ill. There is, it has its own... Now, they would never have said that many years ago. You know what happened with the homosexual freaks? I believe it was 1974. I have an article on this on my website, how the there was no great scientific study that caused the removal of homosexuality as mental illness. How can you vote on a mental illness, whether something's an illness or not? Well, they do for this. The Soviets were the vanguard of using mental illness as a way to shut people up. And in Grigorenko's case, they just said, well, he would have had this perfect life. And yet he threw it away in being a dissident. Therefore, he must be insane, because only an insane person would do that. When your idea of a human person is that we're just, you know, pleasure-seeking animals, as Marxism does see, does believe, and capitalism too, well, he is insane. Well, no, he's not. The ideology is wrong. If you read through the DSM-5, as I have many times, everyone has a mental illness. Everyone. And there's no explicit mention. You know, certain things, I mentioned narcissism last time. Most highly intelligent people act like that. Now, narcissism may be a legitimate mental illness if the person isn't what he says he is. If he says that he's king of Spain, like you see in Gogol's Diary of a Madman, and he's not, in fact, the king of Spain, you may have a problem. But they don't say that. The regime is obsessed right now, as we well know, with figuring out ways around the First Amendment. Now, there's two ways that they can do this, and they are doing this. Number one, redefining certain forms of verbiage as assault. That in saying something, it's worse than being beaten. Now, that happens to be true, but not for the agenda that they want it for. Psychological violence is far, far worse than physical. Physical violence heals. Psychological does not. But what they're saying is for those who disagree with the official agenda, whether it be homosexuality or anything else, they have a mental disorder. With mental disorder, we don't have to convict them of anything. We don't have to deal with First Amendment issues now. They're sick people. And they can be put away, especially if they're driven to the point of such anger in the way that they're being treated, that they lash out, which any normal human being would do. We've just witnessed the conviction of two comrades of mine from the Charlottesville thing. We've all seen the video that the jury saw, that these men didn't assault anyone, that they were acting in self-defense, that the person there was well-armed in attacking them. The jury saw that. and convicted him anyway. Now, what does this mean? I mean, the evidence was blatantly clear. The video was seen by every juror. We've seen it. It's public now. And being naive, I thought, oh, they're going to be let off, because clearly these black guys who came to the rally to hurt people were armed. They assaulted people without cause. And when he fought back in a purely defensive way, which the video shows, I figured, well, there's not going to be any problem, right? No. Because they were neo-Nazis, or so it was said, the jurors got scared and said, well, we can't be known as defending them, so we have to convict. Now, from what I know so far, the lawyer, I don't know if he's a state attorney or a private one, called no witnesses, even though there were hundreds of them there, and even said that this man was guilty of assault. His defense attorney said, I want you to convict him of assault, not anything aggravated, anything in a felony realm. Well, why would he say that? And why would he have no witnesses? The man presented no defense. And we know why. You had 9,000 witnesses there, if you wanted to find witnesses. The defense rested without presenting evidence. From what I could read in the newspaper articles, that's exactly what happened. That is a classic case of ineffective assistance of counsel. And if you can't see the connections here, then there's something wrong with you. This is the end. This is where even basic perception is being manipulated. The defense refused to defend our allies there in Charlottesville. Comrades of mine, didn't know them personally, but they're comrades of mine regardless. The video evidence couldn't have been clearer. And they were convicted anyway. They haven't been sentenced yet. I don't know where they are at the moment. I don't know how that works down in Virginia, but if they were remanded or if they can be out on bail until the sentencing hearing in August. And the jury, which down in Virginia can request a sentence, requested 10 years. Now, as far as I know, this guy doesn't have any priors. The simple fact was that the far left had publicly and loudly said they were going to come there to kill us. They were armed. They were armed offensively. We were armed defensively. The police refused to separate us. I was there. I know this. And so deliberately started a riot. And then through the video phones, found people who they may be able to prosecute, and thereby destroying the nationalist movement in America. Now, jurors can be picked and vetoed by the defense. So they had the opportunity to weed out anybody who was maybe biased. But how you can get a fair trial in Charlottesville, when the place was absolutely electric at the time, with the media droning on into their heads that these were evil people who started a riot for no reason and wanted to kill people. You add that to the fear that they would have that they may kill us if we don't convict this guy. And relatives of those two comrades of mine are being threatened every day now. And I've seen it on Facebook because they know nothing's going to happen to them. For 30 years or longer, the far left has attacked us, has attacked policemen, have committed aggravated assault and attempted murder at every rally in front of cops with nothing happening to them. Well, now the right got 2,000 men in the field. The first time that's ever happened. And the regime got scared. The city was mobilized against us. The city had its official, you know, they sponsored vigils against us, which, by the way, is illegal. You can't support one political group over another as a government. Governments have to be neutral. But for the city to make war on a political group or a political movement and then try them in the same city, and then worse than that, have this laughable defense of refusing to call witnesses and telling the jury, yeah, he hit someone for no reason, just not as bad as you say. I mean, this is horror. Saint Seraphim says that, Avaritsa says that it's prosperity. It's going to kill us. It's the fact that these jurors had too much to lose. They were afraid they would be attacked, but they knew they'd be attacked. They know what happens to anyone who defends our people. Besides the fact that they had been so brainwashed, the word neo-Nazi gets them frightened. They're absolutely convinced that this man wanted to kill for no reason. That's what they were told. As far as I can see, the defense said nothing about that and let it go. And this is not the first time this happened. There was no defense, from what I can see thus far. The point is, when you get states and governments dropping the veil of neutrality and saying we're at war with anyone who fights globalization, then the predictions of these saints now finally has come true. But because Protestants have been for centuries screaming that the sky is falling every 10 years or so, now any claim about the end of the world is laughed at. Orthodoxy has never claimed that officially until very recently. The U.S. military, city of Charlottesville, the U.S. as a public-private entity, will destroy and has said in public it will destroy any anti-globalist movement, send them to jail. If they have to invent a reason, they'll do it, as they've already done. I remember, of course, the murder of Edgar Steele. Edgar Steele, who was a friend of mine, murdered in Idaho prison on a ridiculous charge. The people who killed him knew that no one was going to care. No one in government or the press was going to condemn them for it. And because, you know, he's a Nazi. So he should and can be killed. Any of us in jail are in trouble. Now I want to end this by saying that, yeah, finally, Orthodox people are talking about the end. This is the true Church of Christ finally saying everything that the great saints from the beginning of the church to today have said the end will look like, it looks like. Protestants, and the fundamentalists, and every few years with a new end of the world scam, they've made us look ridiculous. And so now, anytime we say it, it looks absurd to the average person. But we know that it's true. If this isn't the end, then nothing is. Because this is worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. But one thing that the ancients didn't understand is how now even perception is being manipulated. You saw one of the men that I had, one of the saints that I had quoted early on, spoke of the media. You also heard Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino speak of the media. The so-called Rohingya crisis in Burma. There are two pictures that have been used recently. One was a flood in Nigeria that they said was done by the Burmese army. Another one was a kid enslaved in Cambodia, which they said was in Burma. They could say anything. No one has any idea why we're in Afghanistan or Iraq. The media is able to create a world such that these jurors were willing to send these very good, very innocent boys to jail, comrades of mine. I beg of you to visit them, to send money in there, put money in their commissary, whatever it takes, and for God's sake, stay out of trouble. This is the end. We see what the U.S. military really is and what they've done over the last few decades and what they've covered up. And now they're the biggest drug dealer in the world. It all connects. It's all one thing. Lord, have mercy on us.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.